Welcome to The Voice of Retail. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc. This podcast is brought to you in conjunction with Retail Council of Canada. Today, I'm thrilled to be sharing a full episode from my all-new Conversations with Commerce Next podcast featuring John Mendel, Senior Vice President of Global Membership Marketing and Commerce with WW. WW started their digital transformation long before the pandemic demanded brands to keep up with the great acceleration of e-commerce. And on this episode, along with my co-hosts, Scott Silverman, we get an inside look at the processes and people behind WW's great leap forward and how the groundwork laid in the past is preparing them for future success. John walks us through the overall process and strategy behind the transition and how the pandemic changed the game. We ask John about his career, what he looks for when building a resilient team, and advice that he would give his past self. I launched the Conversations with Commerce Next podcast with my US-based partners to meet the top practitioners and thought leaders in the DTC and e-commerce marketing space and explore both their tradecraft and share the learnings from their career journeys. Let's listen in now as Scott kicks off our conversation.
Welcome to another episode of Conversations with Commerce Next podcast. We are excited to sit down and have a conversation with John Mendel, who's SVP of Global Membership Marketing and Commerce at WW, formerly Weight Watchers. We'll be talking about digital transformation and loyalty. John, welcome to the podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Scott. Happy to be here. It's going to be fun.
And I am joined by my co-host, Michael LeBlanc. How are you today, Michael?
I'm great. Thank you. You know, John, you and I have a couple of intersection points in our careers. I was the CMO for a weight loss company here in Canada called Herbal Magic, which was not Herbal Life, but Herbal Magic, which was a not dissimilar kind of format. And Mindy Grossman and I worked in the same circles. I was with Canada's version of HSN for 7 years as head of marketing. Oh. So you and I kind of intersect in a roundabout way in our careers.
That's great.
So, you know, part of these podcasts is we like to get into some career information and background. So why don't we start there, John? You have an interesting background in terms of e-commerce because you didn't jump into a traditional e-commerce role until later in your year. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about your professional journey, how you landed at WW and what you do in your current role.
No, not a kind of quote normal career path, if you will, but one that was very organic and I think has certainly helped me. So, you know, started out thinking I was going to be in the world of finance, thinking Wall Street, et cetera, originally. But very early on, when I got out of college, I had a unique opportunity to start my first company. It was in the healthcare space in insurance, because as I was getting into finance, that was one of the early licenses that you get. And the idea was to help people, obviously pre-Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, was to help people who either couldn't afford or qualify for insurance to be able to take advantage of the same discounts for healthcare that insurance companies get. It was my very first company that I started, got it off the ground, had a few big wins, but ultimately, like many other things, didn't work out for a number of reasons. And in this case, a lot of it had to do with different legislations in local governments, et cetera. But it really gave me that first taste of what it was like to be an entrepreneur. This was down in Florida. After that, I decided to move back to New York, originally from New York, to get back into finance. That lasted all of about 6 weeks, and realized that I had that bug, that entrepreneurial bug, and was really not interested in kind of the world of finance and Wall Street, et cetera. It was there that I met a gentleman named Salim Ismail. Salim, a serial entrepreneur, now is running EXO, worked at Yahoo, Singularity, et cetera. And Salim had started a tech company called PubSub, which is essentially the predecessor to Google Alerts, if you will, real-time monitoring of the internet. This is back in the very early 2000s, before certainly within New York, before there was a real big tech scene, and that was a cool thing to do. And that kind of got me started in the technology space, helping Salim to shape what was a hardcore technology company full of really brilliant engineers into a business. Over the next few years, had come to work at a number of startups, some that I worked at, some that I started myself. and was really having a great time. I thought that was kind of what my career was going to be. And then we hit the Great Recession in 2007, and it became increasingly difficult to raise venture capital. A lot of things weren't necessarily going the right way. And I was presented with an opportunity at 1-800-Flowers. So 1-800-Flowers had been a company that, after they had gone public, had been very aggressive in acquiring businesses. So they owned Fannie Mae Chocolates and the Popcorn Factory and Cheryl's Cookies, et cetera. But they hadn't done as much in building companies from scratch. And as their leadership there, specifically Jim McCann, was looking at what was happening within the landscape of the New York tech community, wanted to see how we could start building some businesses. And essentially, that's kind of what I came in to do, was to help create some companies from kind of the ground up, which involved different teams, different organizations, et cetera. So that was kind of the first half of my career at 1-800-Flowers. I think when I went in there, my expectation was, oh, I'll probably work here for about a year. Economy will turn around and I'll go back to the startup space. Fast forward, I spent 9 incredible years at 1-800-Flowers. So the first half was in this area of helping them build out businesses and essentially running a skunk works for them. And the second half was really helping to reshape the company's unique selling proposition around multi-brand customers. And that's where I really made that bigger pivot into e-commerce and customer experience, right? Was that idea of saying, hey, we're not just going to take products that we sell you for an occasion, but we are going to fully understand the entire member journey and understand, as a gifting company, what is it that you're looking to buy a gift for? Who is that person? What's the reason? What are they like? With the opportunity to then expose people to the entire collection of brands that were under the 1-800-Flowers umbrella. And you'll see a lot of that live today. If you go to any of their websites, you'll see all the brands at the top of the page. There's joint loyalty programs, joint free shipping programs, et cetera. So building out this kind of multi-brand organization was something that certainly I was really proud of, but really got me focused on loyalty, got me focused on e-commerce and certainly customer experience. Just to quickly move things around, I decided to leave 1-800-Flowers after about 9 years there, wound up joining one of the leading CEO advisory firms called Teneo to help do this work for other companies, specifically within the Fortune 1 and 200. And had a really great time doing that and helped a lot of really cool brands. And that was when WW became a client of mine. And from Mindy Grossman, Gail Tifford, and the entire leadership there that I got to work with knew that this was an incredible place with incredible purpose, doing really, really great things that I just wanted to be a part of. So I transitioned over from Teneo into WW, you know, have kind of grown up there a little bit over the last 3 to 4 years, but most recently I'm responsible for the membership business. So everything that it means from being a member to from member success to engagement to loyalty, retention, certainly all the way through to the products that we create for you, those consumer products and our e-commerce business.
You know, e-commerce loves entrepreneurs and the innovation and the new ideas that they bring. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And I always find it so interesting, the backgrounds of people in this space. I mean, from former lawyers to chemical engineers to people from Wall Street and so on. So, and I think it's instructive for anyone, no matter where you are. I think you can find a way where you can contribute and add value into e-commerce. So, so now you're at WW, and WW had this pretty well-known digital transformation that started pre-COVID. And, you know, maybe you could talk about what that was like, where the transformation was when you joined, and then what does it look like, you know, in terms, you know, from your point of view on, you know, from a product and an e-commerce standpoint?
Sure. So certainly the digital transformation of the company started, you know, certainly before I got there, with really the launch of the WW app and start building out of the infrastructure on how to do that, right? WW been around for almost 60 years, which started out as an in-person meeting business. So it was a pretty big transformation that they had been going on to a business now, right, with millions and millions of members who overwhelmingly are digital. But when I joined, we were getting ready to go through the brand transformation, which was shedding the Weight Watchers name and moving into WW and all of what that meant, right? And for us, it was certainly, we're never going to give up our spot as, you know, kind of the number one leader in weight loss and weight management. But we could be so much more as people were focused on health and wellness in ways that they hadn't been before. So for us, it was using technology to really help empower that. So to make sure that in addition to weight loss and tracking, which is a big part of what WW is about, we were able to add in sleep, activity, mindset, content, and tools around it. Specifically for our consumer products and our e-commerce business, it meant shedding a lot of the products that we were in before that were essentially diet food that we were selling. And as a health and wellness company, that wasn't the business that we wanted to be in. So either got out of or reformulated all of our food products. We removed all the artificial ingredients. We went for things that were more nutrient dense. We went into new products, uplifted the quality of our products through thoughtful co-brands that we could do in areas where we wanted to leverage someone else's expertise and credibility. But what it enabled was, you know, so much more that the app could do, that a digital company could do. And if you look back to the commerce space, that even allowed us to then get into having our own marketplace, because of the idea that our brand was so much more than just about weight loss, that there were other areas we could play, other products that we could bring to market. Everything we've always done has always been science-based and science-backed. It still continues to be. But now we're just able to bring those experiences to life in different ways.
So I mean, it's such a wholesale change, because we're not just talking a brand change or an identity change. We are talking effectively a brand-based business model modification and transformation, right? I mean, the full realization of the ambition of Weight Watchers as it was initially conceived, and WW as it exists today. Yeah.
I mean, I think it's certainly a huge transformation there, but there's still so many things that from day one are still absolutely core, right? So certainly the program itself and the idea of our points and understanding the foods right. that you're eating to make healthier choices. Certainly that sense of community, whether you're getting that community in a physical room with people or you're getting it in the app within our internal social network, and certainly that science backing. So I think there's a lot of stuff, but like many other things, you know, we've had to evolve and kind of meet customers where they are, and that's what we do now.
So, I mean, it's fun to talk to you about this digital transformation. You were able to actually get this started before COVID. A lot of companies are, you know, started it during COVID. I'm interested to hear how you prioritize what you focus on and the experiences that you're bringing to your customers, the products that you're bringing the customers. I would imagine for a lot of folks listening, there's a lot of shiny objects that you can get drawn into. And I'm interested to hear, like, how do you go about setting those priorities? How do you know what your customers, what's going to resonate with them? How do you, and do you think about getting a little bit ahead of where they were versus just being where they are now?
Yeah. So great questions. And yes, certainly we were on that digital transformation path, but COVID accelerated it, right? We had to pivot the entire meeting business or workshop business, if you will, within 6 days. It wasn't our primary business, but we still had to do that because it certainly was not able to have people, are paying money every single month to get together to talk about their weight loss journey, and they weren't able to do that. So I would say, I think while we started early, COVID probably accelerated it, and we probably jump 3 years in the future in a matter of months. But I think that's not too dissimilar from many other companies. But for us, when we're looking at all the priorities and the strategies, you know, it's a tough balance. It really is. Certainly, you know, we're a publicly traded company. There are business goals that we are trying to achieve. There's market share we're trying to capture. I think one of the biggest wholesale changes that I've seen at the company in regards to this has really actually been our focus on retention. Historically, we have been overly focused on just acquisition. And what we've built up is really a retention practice within the business to say, hey, as we're continuing to feed the top of the funnel, how are we making sure that people aren't falling out the bottom? And that's helped a lot for us. That's where the rewards program came from. That's where a lot of our member journey work has come from, and how we focus on that entire life cycle.
If you're enjoying this podcast, please be sure and hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcast platform so you don't miss another great episode. We'll be right back with our interview with John Mandel from WW right after these important messages. Bloomreach is the world's number one e-commerce experience cloud, empowering brands to deliver customer journeys so personalized they feel like magic. It offers a suite of products that drive true personalization and digital commerce growth, including discovery, offering AI-driven search and merchandising, content, offering a headless CMS, and engagement, offering a leading CDP and marketing automation solution. Together, these solutions combine the power of unified customer and product data with the speed and scale of AI optimization, enabling digital commerce experiences that convert on any channel and every journey. Learn more at BloomReach.com. That's BloomReach.com.
But I think for us, it's you know, okay, so what are the 10x ideas that we can have, right? This year, for the first time, we've come out with a brand new program that now has a track for people with diabetes, right? There's a lot of people in the country, certainly in the world, with diabetes. How can we help them? So those are kind of the big ideas that we get to focus on. And they're probably further and few between that we get to do those. And then there's the ones that are just more in the weeds, but that can really make an impact on a member's life. So it's not just important to get them to join, but it's important to make sure they're successful. So how do we put and prioritize things around how do we onboard a member and make sure they're successful? How do we focus on the other parts of the journey where we're able to give them that recognition, that motivation, that support? Mm-hmm. And then how are we focusing, you know, our attention on them even when they're looking to leave? And while we never want anyone to leave, a lot of folks come back to WW time and time again because the program works so well. So are we making sure that that's a good experience for them as well? And that's usually where a lot of these decisions get made and the priorities get focused are kind of in that balance there.
Right. So speaking of retention and getting members to come back, I mean, your initial role at WW is focused on loyalty and rewards. This has been a huge buzzword in the industry. I think for a lot of retail, they saw an influx of new customers come in during COVID, and the goal was, well, how do you retain them? And because that's going to be the key to growing business, along with other external issues that are going on that's making acquisition more expensive. I'm interested to hear your thoughts. I mean, you've been spending a lot of time on loyalty, and is there a definition that you have or that the company's adopted that is kind of a North Star for thinking about retention and loyalty?
No, you know, I think for us, it's been a trajectory that we've been on, right? From, you know, a subscription business to at least what we've been referring to now as a membership business. And I think even in those words carries a lot of meaning as to how you treat the folks that are paying you every single month and the value they're getting out of it. So for us, yeah, the first thing I did at WW was help the company build and launch a rewards program, which was kind of the first step on our loyalty journey, if you will. But for us, the rewards program is here to help incentivize and reward people for building healthy habits. It's not a rewards program that's focused on how long you've been a member. It's not one that's focused on how much money you spend with us, right? So immediately that was really just a shift in the thought behind it of saying, hey, we're here to reward and incentivize you to do things that ultimately are going to make you healthier and build those healthy habits. But for us, our view of loyalty is really just coming from the value that you're getting for the money that you're paying and the sense of belonging and the sense of community that you have in the pride that you've taken on your weight loss journey and how you feel and how you've helped other people and how other people have helped you within our community. Those are hugely important. The bonds you form with your coaches, the behaviors that we are helping you build for life. It's those type of things that build that fanatical engagement that ultimately leads to real loyalty. I think that customer experience is hugely important, right? We're all being graded on whatever the last best experience we have. That's no different for us at WW, but ours is really layered in that idea of member success. The more we can help make you successful at building those healthy habits, then the more loyal you're going to be and the longer you're going to stay with us.
Congratulations on building an innovative loyalty program, because your business is a mix of intrinsic and extrinsic motivations, right? The intrinsic reward of achieving your objectives, and then extrinsically the community awards and these other awards. Let's shift gears for a little bit. Let's talk about careers. You manage careers and the people you hire. We manage about a team of 40 plus people. You know, when you look at new people, what kind of criteria, what kind of lens are you looking at? We had a recent interview with a CMO who talked about medium skill, high will, you know, this idea of potential versus education. What lens do you put on when people are in front of you and you're hiring for roles in your team?
Yeah, you know, it obviously depends on the role, but first and foremost, I'm looking for someone that can help make me smarter. I think that's always important. I also look for people that can help round out other experiences that are on the team. We do our best work when we are together as a team, we're moving as one, and where we could all then make ourselves smarter. So that's the first thing that I really look for. And then someone who understands what it's like to be part of a team. From there, you know, certainly I'm looking for people who have certain experiences, but those that are hungry and are looking to gain those experiences probably carry a little bit more weight with me. I would also say when I'm interviewing folks, I tend to get a lot more out of the interview from the questions that I'm being asked rather than the answers to the questions that I'm asking them. I can really see where people's interests lie, where there's a brain at work, and kind of by the questions they would ask, how they would kind of make the position theirs. So for me, those are some of the really important pieces.
It's so interesting because it the beginning part of your evaluation is like a portfolio strategy. How do I make sure that I have the right team members to balance the portfolio of skills that you need in your team? So in your career, you've had a wonderful journey in different directions. You know, at one point you thought you'd be a lifelong entrepreneur startup, and then you wound up in a larger corporate environment. Is there anything you, as you look back and reflect, would you do anything different? Is there, you know, you kind of choose the paths, or sometimes you're pointed in the direction of some paths when economic challenges happen, COVID. Anything you do differently? Would you have gotten into these type of roles earlier, or any thoughts on that?
Probably not. I don't know that there's anything I would have done differently. I do think everything happens for a reason. I do think you have to make the most of the things that come up. I do think that's something for other folks when you're thrown, you know, either a curveball or a unique opportunity, is to really just seize it, because you don't know where things will go. I would say that all of the things in my career that have seemingly happened outside of the plan have been the most fruitful. They have helped make me the most well-rounded that I can be, and really have that kind of peripheral vision for what's happening throughout an organization. It's those silos and those blinders that can be debilitating as you're trying to grow within an organization or to grow in organization. So I would just, you know, for me, nothing I would want to kind of do over. Doesn't mean everything was perfect or great, right? I just think it happens for a reason.
Well, it's interesting because the journey is grab the opportunity, whatever they are, and follow it up and see what happens, right? As you said, you didn't imagine you'd be at 1-800-Flowers for 9 years. But it sounds like you did fascinating, interesting work that was still at the core of what you love to do, right? Create innovation and opportunity. All right, let's now put you 5 years in the future. We asked this question less about what your organization is going to look like in 5 years and more about the role of a CMO in 5 years. So, you know, are CMOs in 5 years just working algorithms? Are they, you know, are they so steeped in the data that brand takes a second step? How do you envision the role of a CMO from your perspective in 5 years?
You know, I think some things are going to be different and some things will still be the same. I think the power of brand is probably more important than it's ever been, given how low a lot of the barriers to entry are for new players to get into almost any space, and how disrupted so many industries have been. So I think having a powerful brand is important. We're increasingly seeing the value of being a purpose-driven organization. I'm really proud that I work at one. Before I worked at one, that was not something that was even on my radar. Right. But now I can't imagine working at one that wasn't purpose-driven. I do think with all the ways that we're going to get smarter when it comes to data and personalization and targeting and sophistication, is also constantly being met with curveballs being thrown in our way from whether it's regulators or privacy acts or things like that, that, you know, mm-hmm. you seemingly take two steps forward and one step back in that area. And sometimes those are good things. Sometimes they're bad, right? If you look at, you know, what's part of the right thing for society as a whole.
Yeah.
But I think that it will still definitely be about having a quality product and a quality experience. And whether that experience starts all the way from the very first time you're exposed to the brand till you're consuming the product itself, whether that's a physical one or a digital one, how that makes you feel the entire experience is still going to be really, really, really key as we look at other things. I think the technologies will come and go and they'll evolve. But ultimately, it's how it makes you feel and how you identify with the thing.
So in 5 years, it's fair to say your role will be overseeing that brand experience. As it is today, everything else kind of moves around, but that core remains the same. In fact, gets even more prominent, even more important. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it does. It becomes even more important. And it's really is how do you even extract more value out of it, right? What are the things in it that's right for you? If you were to look at WW, right, people come for the weight loss, but they stay for the wellness. Well, what does that look right. like in the future? What are the other things that are going to make them stay? How else can we then help them? Because certainly we're just scratching the surface.
Well, all of what you've achieved and what you plan to achieve takes great people. So we wanted to offer you this opportunity. We get lots of listeners, lots of people in the industry. If you've got any open roles that you wanted to share or encourage people to join WW on your journey, the floor is yours. Anyone you're looking for right now? And talk about that for a bit.
Yeah, certainly. Within our product and tech organizations, we are always hiring great folks, talented folks who are building some really cool things. Within our e-commerce business, we're always looking for top talent. And within marketing overall, as well as even, you know, more in the grassroots, we're always hiring more coaches to help our members. But I would say for anyone who is looking to be part of a purpose-driven company where you can really change people's lives, WW is one of them. And it's just the people that are here that are a big part of the reason why I come to work every day. Before I worked here, it was almost a bit of a cliche to me to say that, oh, well, I just, you know, I want to work somewhere because of the people that are there. And then you have the experience to work with some of the people that I get to work with every single day, and you realize actually how important that is. So it's a fantastic team with a really great culture that's really making an impact on people's lives. And we get to see it each and every day. So if that's something you want to be a part of, certainly send along your resume.
Well, John, thank you so much for taking some time, sharing your career journey from entrepreneur to, you know, marketing and e-commerce leader in some big companies, telling us a little bit about the way WW is looking at loyalty. I think it's really interesting that you're focused on the benefit and the outcome rather than just selling people more stuff. I think that's a really unique approach to it. Thank you so much for being a part of this. Thanks, Michael, for co-hosting with me again as well.
Yeah, it was really great to be here, John. Great to meet you and hear you discuss the journey. It was a wonderful discussion. And again, we'll put a link in the show notes to where folks can join you along that journey to help people develop those healthy habits and really change people's lives.
Awesome. Michael, Scott, thank you both so much.
Thanks for tuning into this episode of Conversations with Commerce Next. Please follow us on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast platform, where we will be sharing career advice and marketing strategies from e-commerce and digital marketing leaders at retailers and direct-to-consumer brands each and every episode. Commerce Next is a community, event series, and conference for marketers at retail and direct-to-consumer brands. Through our online forums, interviews, webinars, summits, and other in-person events, we harness the collective wisdom of our community to help marketers grow their businesses and advance their careers. Join Commerce Next events to meet other industry leaders and learn the latest e-commerce and marketing strategies. You can find upcoming events at commercenext.com. Have a fantastic week, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of The Voice of Retail. Be sure and follow the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you enjoy podcasts so you don't miss out on the latest episodes, industry news, and insights. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider leaving a rating review, as it really helps us grow so that we continue to get amazing guests onto the show. I'm your host, Michael LeBlanc, president of Emmy LeBlanc Company, Inc., and if you're looking for more content or want to chat, follow me on LinkedIn or visit my website at emmyleblanc.co. Until next time, stay safe, have a great week.